Dawn Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the free Odyssey app.
So big news today. First of all, since 6 o'clock this morning, you know I've been leading with the story of this tragedy. Two killed, many others injured with this explosion, a series of explosions, fires happening in Pennsylvania, in the steel plant there, impacting so many. And then all of the heroics with first responders moving in, and they were able to save at least one person, pulling one victim from the rubble. Incredible stories of these heroic first responders. And as well, obviously, the Pennsylvania, thinking about the budget, thinking about SEPTA, all of those moving parts as we think about the vote that's expected to happen today. So we wanted to bring in one of the most powerful women in Pennsylvania, somebody who has made history as an elected official here, our own state senator, Kim Ward, who's pro tempore, obviously. But thank you for joining me this morning.
I'm happy to be with you this morning.
Absolutely. So can you, first of all, do you have an update as far as the, you know, just our condolences? I know a lot of prayers for, you know, what happened inside the plant there, and as well the first responders who were so heroic and making some rescues and working so hard to now figure out what went wrong here.
Well, I did talk to I talked to some of the union leaders down there, and also talked to the CEO this morning and yesterday, and They're going to find out what happened, but it's just such a devastating, devastating event for the families of those who are hurt and have died. And it's such a devastating event for the steelworker community. It affects all of us in the region because, you know, steel was part of who many of us, me, growing up, that was important. And it's just a painful thing for the steelworker family and community. And it's awful.
Yeah.
Terrible.
I am so
terrible.
Sorry.
Terrible.
Yeah. 100 years. Right. And
terrible.
So it was awful to see. I thank God that they were able to rescue as many people as they did. And so just, I know a lot of prayers. We just wanted to extend that just so you know, everybody is just devastated to see that. Looking toward switching gears, you know, thinking about what's going on with regard to today, with the budget, we've obviously had the conversation before, looking to SEPTA, and I know many, many people just feel it's unfair across the state that people who don't get the benefits of SEPTA have to pay for, you know, the bigger cities like Philadelphia, like Pittsburgh. And then on top of it, is it just an antiquated system that needs some government efficiency and needs to do better to save the tax dollars, like every one of us, you know, we save our pennies to spend our dollars. And I think there's a general feeling that this is a huge budget item and that across Pennsylvania, taxpayers have to pay for, you know, others when they don't get the real benefit. Is that fair?
So we, you know, I'm going to start with saying we realize that mass transit is important,
yep.
Right? We know it's important. But to your point, it needs to be more efficiently run. And this crisis, you know, I'm a little unhappy because all we're talking about is SEPTA. Mm-hmm. That's all we're talking about because they're threatening to not take kids to school on the 24th of August. When this is, the governor could just say, look, there's a trust fund. We have a public transit trust fund. There's $2.3 billion in this trust fund. We could today use that money in the short term and avert what they're threatening to do, which I find really terrible that they are using the most vulnerable people and our school kids to try to force the legislature and the people of Pennsylvania to give in to exactly what they want. I find that to be wrong. And this trust fund is sitting here. It's here for operational and capital projects. So a month ago, we asked for the list of capital projects, and it's a month later tomorrow, and we still don't have a list of capital projects. This can be averted, and it can be averted today. It can be averted swiftly. The governor, I think the governor can just say spend it. Now, I'm not 100% sure on that, Mm-hmm. But we can, let's do this. Let's use the money. But the Democrats and the governor have said, no, the other day the governor didn't answer the question in Philadelphia when asked if he would use the trust fund. But they have both said, you know, we can't have a short-term fix. The House Dems are saying, no, we can't use this. We're talking about it across the building, but we can't use this. I need to know why we can't use this. In the governor's press conference the other day, he said he took money from roads and bridges. So he took money, dedicated money that was for projects that will now move back off of roads and bridges, and he said he put it in mass transit. The truth is he put it all in SEPTA. No other transit firms, organizations in the state got any of that money. Mm-hmm. But it's the same as what we're saying. There's a fund here. Let's not use it.
Yeah. And so with this, as far as the Shapiro, you broke up, and I thought you, sorry about that. You broke up a little bit. Sorry for that. Governor Josh Shapiro's administration had warned, talking all about like what you're saying, public transit, but then the school districts, and talking about the children. And that's, to me, what I see here is, no matter what anybody says, we always go, this is a go-to, because of course, in cities like Philadelphia, the school children, middle school, junior high school level. And I know we've talked about this, but it's important that people understand this, because a lot of people in rural and suburban districts do not understand this, that here in Philadelphia, they farm out the school buses or the older kids, middle school, like I say, middle school, junior high school and high school level take SEPTA. So in other words, that basically guarantees kids will take SEPTA. I'll be honest, I've spoken out about this. I think it's wrong. I think if suburban kids get door-to-door service, which essentially it is, if you've ever been stuck behind a school bus, how come not for Philadelphia or Pittsburgh kids? And it just seems to me, Kim, and you can tell me if I'm wrong here, but it just feels like there's more of an allegiance to the unions and supporting a bloated SEPTA agency, which can't, you know, they can't sustain themselves, and they create a budget deficit, but it's all about politics and the unions and not really about A, balancing a budget, government efficiency, and truly serving our school children here.
And for them to be using and threatening to not run the lines to get these kids to school is actually in a form of abuse of these children. They're using them as pawns.
Yeah,
it's abuse, and it's not right. And, you know, they can avert it today if they want to use their trust fund. It's sitting there. Just use it. It's over $3.5 billion.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some of the rest of the public transit in the state, I mean, Pittsburgh, of course, has an active public transit, but the cities do. But most of us, I can't go out and get on a bus,
mm-hmm,
and go to the store. I mean, I can if I want to wait 5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not the same. We have roads and bridges. They're just as important.
Yeah.
You know, to get, that's how we get around. That's how our school kids go to school. They ride a school bus over those roads and bridges. So, you know, I find this whole thing I'm going to go back to, it irritates me that we have a whole budget to do. We, mm-hmm, should be doing this as a whole budget. But SEPTA has, and the governor and the House Dems have just put this in a silo, and this is what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
We have hospitals to worry about, schools to worry about, nursing homes to worry about. There's a lot of other issues that need to be addressed, and all the energy and focus,
mm-hmm,
is on SEPTA. That's not right. And I think what SEPTA does is important, right? We just talked,
sure,
about it. It's how you get around. You couldn't put all those cars on the road. But come on, man. Sound like Joe Biden.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
It's so true. You know, and that brings me to, and we'll play this outside this interview, but I, you know, Dan Borowski, our executive producer, caught a new little something coming from the office of Stacey Garrity. And we know that, you know, I've interviewed her. She says, you know, well, would you be Governor Garrity? That has a nice ring to it. somebody like the treasurer, who's very good with money and talking about budgets and that sort of thing, does this argument, as this goes on and drags on, is this a bad look for our Democrat governor when perhaps he'll have the strongest challenger he has faced if indeed Stacey Garrity, our current treasurer, decides to make a run for this job?
I think he has a problem if she runs for this job, period, because, I mean, she's tough. She's smart. She's a decorated veteran. She's tough, and she will be a great candidate. And, you know, all these other times, the governor kind of danced through the raindrops, right? Nobody would help anybody that was running against him. They just put this shroud around. It was almost like a Bob Casey, oh, you can't beat him. Well, I think that Stacey Garrity brings quite the challenge. And this is difficult. I mean, why hasn't the governor announced for governor yet? Mm-hmm. If he announces, this is hard. And I think, you know, I've been talking about a temporary budget, right? And they're so against it because they need to get this done. Because once he announces, if this isn't done, that will, you know, it's a national story anyway once he announces. And he wants to play the bipartisan role. But, you know, this budget negotiation, they've been saying, let's keep the temperature down. The governor has, let's keep the temperature down. Let's keep the temperature down. But then they go out and blast us for the governor of Pennsylvania, for the governor from, you know, this large, large state, to go out and attack and go after a freshman senator from Philadelphia is just a low vibe behavior. Yeah. That is not behavior you expect to see out of a governor. And it's not behavior you would have ever seen happen out of Ed Rendell.
Yeah.
He would have had this done. This deal would have been over. He would have led and he would have taken care of it. And I, you know, some days I sorely miss Ed Rendell and I sorely miss Tom Wolf. Because the thing about Governor Wolf was, you know, we didn't agree on a lot, but the guy was good for his word, and you know, we were able to work with him and get stuff done.
So on this one, key sticking points, is this, you know, I know that you said they've siloed SEPTA and there's an important deadline coming up. What do you hope, you know, and I know you're pushing, obviously, you're pushing State Senator Ward, you're pushing to get this done, but what do you see as the key sticking point that's going on as we wind down, you know, to today, which is one of the important deadlines and a vote scheduled?
So what the Democrats want to do is make sure, I think, that they're going to have funding into the future, right? We all want to do that. Well, we have an opportunity to do that by the gaming regulations. We have an opportunity for new money. All of those games are out there now. There's probably 120,000 of them. We can change the regulations, cut down that number, make sure everybody's legal, and we can get dollars from them. We can just put them under gaming. I think that is a great source and opportunity for us to do that. What they want to do is take, I think, 1.75% more of our tax, our sales tax. And that, what does that do? That leaves a $300 million hole in the general budget. So I keep asking, and they know this is a fact. They're trying to do the same thing they're trying to do, but in a different way, right? They're trying to take dollars out of the coffers. And what tax are they planning on raising? What tax do the Democrats, what tax does the governor plan on raising on the people of Pennsylvania if they create a $300 million hole in the general budget? What tax are they going to raise? We know they're not going to cut anything because they never will cut anything. So what are they thinking about? We're going forward. You know, you hear them say, oh, our sales tax revenue is up this year. Okay, yay, it was up this year. What about next year? But beyond that, we have a $2 billion Medicaid addition that we didn't see coming. So maybe the sales tax revenue went up, but didn't even go up enough to cover what we are going to be required to cover in this budget. So, you know, I just think it's we're robbing Peter to pay Paul, not to be cliche, but
yeah. So I know that the vote is to come. We'll wait to hear from you. Thank you so much, State Senator Kim Ward. It's always a pleasure to have you on to hear the latest from you. Really appreciate you.
No, I appreciate you. Have a great day.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
So we'll wait for that one as they duke it out. So obviously it passed through the House, which is controlled by the Dems, but clearly in the Senate for today, controlled by the R's. And so the Republicans on this one, you know, it's a big budget battle and Shapiro at the center of it. So we'll continue to follow this one. We'll take a quick break. Your thoughts, 855-839-1210. Be right back. So let's talk, shall we? I know I seem distracted because I'm maybe going on special assignment soon. So I'll tell you about it if it happens. But we have a lot of plates we're juggling today, a lot happening. So, by the way, that vote, I believe I mentioned this at some point this morning, but that vote is expected today that State Senator Kim Ward referred to in the Senate. It looks like 4 o'clock they will reconvene in the Pennsylvania legislature to deal with this. But you can hear the level of negotiation. It's all about the deal. And then as well, I just love the behind the scenes aspect of it that, you know, I was a little bit shocked when she said that, in fact, it was easier to deal with somebody like Governor Tom Wolf. It doesn't surprise me with Ed Rendell, because I think at the end of the day, and I know Ed, so as mayor, as governor, he was somebody who wanted to get these deals done and that, you know, he was all about that and would negotiate. But I was surprised that she said it was easier to deal with even Governor Tom Wolf or Rendell as opposed to the current governor. So this is a tough battle that they're going through. So we shall see. We'll follow that one. You know, this is where I get distracted. So when Dan earlier was talking about, you know, America's power couple, and that is Sean Duffy, his fabulous better half, Rachel Campos Duffy, anchor at Fox News, obviously. And he was in Minnesota looking at the tower. They're talking about control towers and upgrading our system of air traffic control. So, of course, I went to journalism school, University of Minnesota, Minneapolis. And I had a really cute boyfriend who went to Minnesota Duluth, but I wasn't going to go there. Then I looked.
Why not?
Huh?
What's wrong with Duluth?
Because I'm not. No, Duluth is beautiful.
Uh-huh.
I mean, not in January because it's like 75 below zero.
I was going to say, it sounds very cold.
So then I said to Dan, you know who's from Duluth, Minnesota, very famous individual. His real name is Zimmerman. Who am I talking about? Bob Dylan.
Oh.
Hometown.
Oh.
His hometown is Duluth. I think he still has a home there, by the way, in Minnesota. So then I look up Bob Dylan, and do you know that he is coming to the Outlaw Music Festival for the 10th anniversary tour, Camden, New Jersey, the weekend of September 12th?
Ooh.
How about that?
Now, have you added Friday, that to your September schedule? 12th. Are you going to be going to that?
I would love to go.
Yeah.
So
Willie Nelson, Abbott Brothers. Abbott Brothers are really good too, if you've never checked them out. Kind of similar.
Back in the day, we saw, and it used to be, oh my gosh, what was it named before? In Camden, New Jersey. Oh my gosh.
The Tweeter?
Yeah, the Tweeter Center. Yeah. So we saw Larry and I, we used to go there. Jimmy Buffett. We saw Jimmy Buffett there. It's a fun venue. It's a lot of fun. So if my husband Larry's Lair Bear,
it's a fun venue when it's not humid as hell.
Well, that's true, but yeah, it's Jimmy like Buffett. Wear your sunscreen, and he's right.
Yeah,
remember I told Nikhail, I'm like, wear your sunscreen, and then sure enough, our beloved Jimmy Buffett, it was skin cancer, which is totally preventable, but he didn't wear the sunscreen and loved Key West. See how I digress?
Yeah, I started with Blockbuster actually.
What?
Blockbuster had the first naming rights to Freedom Mortgage Pavilion. Then it went to Tweeter, then Susquehanna Bank, BBT after that.
Wow.
Yeah, now Freedom Mortgage.
Now Freedom Mortgage. So Outlaw Music Festival 10th anniversary tour. I'll bet you Phil Almquist already knew this, but Greg Stocker walked in. He's a huge Dylan fan. I was like, did you know Bob Dylan is coming this September 12th, Friday, September? That's pretty cool.
Show Stocker.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, his son is Dylan, even though his wife denies that they named their son.
Not after Bob
after,
Dylan.
But I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably did.
Now, I got to ask, though. Right. Bob Dylan's now of the age. He's got to be up there, right?
Born May 24th, 1941.
Okay, so he's an 84-year-old guy.
Mm-hmm.
Do you go to a concert expecting to hear Bob Dylan sounding like Bob Dylan, or do you just go to experience the guy before he retires?
Well, look, okay, I'm going to be honest about it. So yeah. he's an amazing songwriter, and we did take our sons to see the movie because you always want to, you know, you and Maisie will want to do
this. Oh, the E-Center, too. Sorry.
E-Center.
Yeah, that's what you're thinking of.
That's what I was thinking
of. Yeah, sorry.
So, but here's the thing. Let's be real about Dylan. I mean, there's not a lot of energy. There's not a lot of jumping around in this performance.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's Dylan.
Yeah, that makes sense.
He stands there.
I got to be honest, Maisie and I, we went to go see Brian Wilson. We're both big Beach Boys fans. And we went and go saw Brian Wilson a couple years back, yeah. And he was probably 79, 80 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Halfway through songs, he had to stop to start coughing because he couldn't hit even halfway the range to the high notes he used to be able to hit. And it was a sad experience more than anything. And I just, that's not the memory I wanted to keep of Brian Wilson, so I try to forget it. But I think someone like, and Brian Wilson, I mean, his range was so high versus a Bob
Amazing.
Dylan where it's kind of laid back, calm. I think Bob could still probably rock it, right?
Yeah, because first of all, he's got a great band. So it's about the music and it's about the lyrics because he's an amazing songwriter. But I will say that you're not talking about somebody, to your point. Even Springsteen, you know, you can tell that he's not as energetic.
Yep.
And he had these energetic, bigger than life, you know, high energy performances where he went on for hours and hours, you know, and the famous line from the comedian is like, "Yo, Bruce, excuse me," but it's like Jimmy Fallon or somebody, "Yo, Bruce, I'm double parked over here. Enough with the stories. Just get to the music." Dylan, however, somebody who think about it. It's, you know what I mean? It's not
to be mean. Give me more
no.
Dylan impression.
We have too many Dylan. No, I mean, he's a music god. I know you guys love Dylan. I love him too, but let's just be real here. He does not have the voice of an angel where you're going to say, oh, to your point about Brian Wilson. You know what I mean? So
here's some comments coming in on YouTube. YouTube.com/@12WPHD. Newman Price. Dylan always kind of sang like an 84-year-old. Chris,
well said. That's
Chris
what I was
says,
trying to say.
Chris says, Dylan's an amazing lyricist, potentially one of the best. I hold Dylan and
Agreed.
Buffett to the highest there is. But yes, although his voice is iconic, not the best.
Yeah.
And finally, Jimmy taking a little more radical approach. Bob Dylan sounded like a drunk rat on cocaine, even in his prime.
See? But maybe this was a strategy. Because maybe Joe Biden years ago should have done this. Because if you sound like, make yourself sound like a drowned rat, you know, when you're in your 30s and 40s, then there's not an expectation when you're in your 80s. You see?
Joe in Columbus has a great analysis. He says, Dylan sounds like he's trying a dad trying to sing a children's nursery rhyme.
I love it. But
I
know. See? He's got that. But he is. He's amazing. He's obviously an icon. We loved the movie. Our sons loved it. And, yeah, so 10th anniversary tour.
South Carolina, talk to text is hard enough for a Southern guy. Imagine being Bob Dylan.
It's in this text message, please.
Pretty good.
Can't
pretty good.
Understand
See?
You there, Bob.
See? But we love the Dylan music. And he guaranteed, basically, that he could still tour well into his 80s. So you got that going on, which is nice. At Dawn Stensland, hit me up on X. We appreciate you. We will take a quick break. Be right back.
As we speak, the federal government is taking over the policing of a major American city, Washington, D.C. The president is doing this not in order to make the city safer. That's the job of local law enforcement. But to solve his own political problems. He needs to get his base talking and thinking about something besides his refusal to open up the Epstein files because he's mixed up in them. And he wants the rest of the country focused on something, anything, besides the work that he has done and continues to do to kick millions of Americans off of their health insurance, to close down rural hospitals, and to undermine basic functions of our government in order.
Boring Pete Buttigieg with his boring bad boots when he came here. Remember that? Boring. But Pete Buttigieg is going there with politics. And I just think, again, Democrats on the offensive, you know, here on the defense, I should say, really put there by Trump when he holds yesterday a major news conference saying D.C. should be a shining light and is a beautiful city where you should feel safe when you visit our nation's capital. And by the way, let's make all of our major cities safe again. Who can argue with that? Well, there was Pete Buttigieg with his bad boots and his boring self. There's the lesser transportation secretary. He's the less. Let's just be real here. He's the lesser. He couldn't even run a city, let alone, don't even get me started with this guy, because we have another great guy coming up, Ben Manis.
Yeah.
Right? Ben Manis, our friend Ben. And Ben,
hi.
We haven't touched base for a little bit. my friend who, you know, we have so much in common. Like, we both love Philadelphia. We both love Italy. I love when we see each other at different events. So much in common, right? No, I'm just teasing. But Ben Manis, man, you have some powerhouse pieces. And we just couldn't wait to hear what Ben Manis might have to say after yesterday's biggity-big D.C. news conference with Trump saying he's going to make America safer again, especially our big cities. Hey, Ben.
Hey, Dawn. Yeah, so this one really hits home because, you know, fair disclosure for all the listeners out there, I served for 10 years with the Metropolitan Police Department, the majority of which were in battles with D.C. government. So, you know, you join law enforcement to go out there and battle criminals and make people safe. But the way that D.C. has been run since it has been a city, which is only since 1974, is in a way that you have to battle them in the ridiculously corrupt way that city is set up just to do your job. It adds to the stress. So, you know, it was welcome to see what President Trump did yesterday. My union, the FOP Lodge 1 in D.C., came out in strong support of what President Trump did. But, you know, you're hearing talking points like the one you just played from Pete Buttigieg, of all people, you know, the former mayor of South Bend, Indiana. Ooh, what a metropolis. You know, coming out against this, and people who really aren't from the district or don't really know anything about the district talking about this. And there's a couple things. If you go to my piece in Broad and Liberty today about this issue, is you're going to see, you know, the history of this. So D.C.'s only been a city since 74. So in 73, they passed a Home Rule Act. This is a problem because D.C. isn't a state, so it has virtually no oversight. And, you know, when you think about D.C., it's 61 total square miles. You know, Philly's 147. But when you take out all the national monuments, military bases, and federal buildings that, you know, obviously it's the nation's capital, mm-hmm. you're talking about 43 square miles. So a city of 43 square miles being number 4 in the nation's high crime murder rate is extremely alarming.
Yeah.
And then when you add this to the fact, it's the most over-policed city in North America, you know, and that includes Canada and Mexico. You know, D.C., the Metropolitan Police has over 3,000 people. It should have 3,800 people, but they're as short as Philly right now. No one wants a job. But then you have all these virtually intertwined federal and multi-purpose agencies like the Interstate Transit Authority, like the U.S. Capitol Police, which actually has more cops for one neighborhood than the entire city of Seattle have at 1,300 people. U.S. Park Police, which are the de facto troopers in D.C. And they're all intertwined, yet D.C. crime is absolutely 100% out of control. How is this? Well, maybe it's the fact that since D.C. has been a city, since 74, they've never, until 2007, and there's a nexus here I want to address, but until 2007, they never actually asked for the ability to create their own prosecutor's office. They have no sheriff, and they have currently a corrections department that only runs a city jail. They lost all their prisons back in the late 90s. So we're in a situation where they've run this place into the ground, yet they're now demanding statehood. So when they started asking for this stuff back in 07, that's when the statehood argument came out. Why do they want statehood? Well, they want two new senators in the Democratic caucus. You know, D.C.'s history is interesting because D.C. used to encompass a swamp that was unused farmland as a compromise for a nation's capital. That was Virginia and Maryland. But in 1849, only 50 years after they organized D.C., Virginia took their land back. They were unhappy with the whole arrangement. So if you really want, if it's a civil rights issue and you put taxation without representation on your tags, why not make D.C. the second largest city in Maryland? It's already physically in Maryland if you look at the map. So, you know, they're not arguing that. They want statehood for 43 square miles, and they want two new senators, and they're going to make this a civil rights argument. And in the meantime, everyone in the city, from the police officers who are unfortunately tasked to police this, on down to the citizens who are being victimized, right, left, and center, from the good neighborhoods to the bad, are stuck as political pawns in a city that's completely dysfunctional because it isn't a state, it isn't a city, it really isn't governed as it should be. as an independent place.
Yeah, it's, I mean, well said in there. And so with this, do you, as far as when you were listening to the news conference with Trump, you know, putting this out there, and just your thoughts as to saying, we're going to take this over for 30 days, we're going to make it safer, and really putting pressure now on Congress to do something, because after the 30 days are up, you know, I believe that, you know, unless he comes up with another game plan here, it's really up to Congress to keep this place safe. And, you know, I got to tell you, we played earlier, and I'm sure you've seen it all, Ben, where, you know, you have news anchors, network news anchors, you know, who are from either they're reporting from New York, but they were in D.C. or they're currently in D.C., even Mika and Joe, as they were talking about it. You're hearing a lot of liberal so-called, you know, corporate-run media where they're kind of saying, well, that sounds kind of nice because, you know, I did get mugged not so long ago, dot, dot, dot. I mean, it's isn't it tough to have this message where they say, oh, no, Trump's takeover. And then, well, okay, what's he going to do? Oh, make it safer? It's just, to me, it's such a bizarre argument.
Yeah, let's unpack that. You're bringing up a bunch of very good points. And let's, point one is this. Trump is allowed, it's just like going to war. It has 30 days.
Oh, no. I'm sorry, Ben.
Just about to make a great point.
Oh.
Let me get them.
Sorry. Just a few technical problems. So I know you guys are working to tweak it here. So we're talking to Ben Manis. Has a couple of great pieces, broadenliberty.com. And as you heard Ben say, I mean, Ben writes about policy, is a policy expert, but as well has walked the walk in law enforcement jobs, local level, national level, that sort of thing. So really has a depth of experience and expertise as well in this. And so, by the way, I was looking up because of Buttigieg, I was looking up at East Palestine, Ohio, and seeing if there was any of the latest. Remember, that was my boots reference with Buttigieg, because remember that? He wore those low energy boots as he was walking. It was just, he's an embarrassment.
Ben's back with us, and he's ready to start at number one again.
And Ben, by the way, wears beautiful Italian boots, right? They're not those low energy Pete Buttigieg boots. Ben is like, what is she talking about? Do we have Ben?
I think so. Ben, you there?
Ben? Oh, no.
What's going on with our
friend? The great Ben Manis. Yeah, we've technical problems. If you can hear us, Ben, we're working on it. It's the Russians. So I don't know what to say. I'm so sorry, Ben. Apologies. And he was just making this amazing point.
There we go.
We got
it
now.
Good. Yeah, there's Ben.
Fantastic.
Yeah,
I don't know if
this is because Soros bought Odyssey or what. you're cutting me off in the middle of a great point here.
Point number one, too.
Yeah. All right. So point number one, he only has 30 days, like going to war. Trump has to get Congress to
act. Yeah, I'll finish this. Fill in the blank. This is weird.
Yeah, this is annoying.
This is very weird. It's the Russians. Yeah. Russia. Let me give you some headlines in between while Dan works on it. So we have a couple of headlines. As we know that there's a whistleblower in Washington, you'll hear this story, accusing Democrats, in particular one senator who allegedly approved an illegal plan to target Donald Trump. And so we have that going on. We're talking about some new jobs numbers and new economic numbers that I'll get to around the corner, but want to give you some hopeful economic news. As this week, we're expecting more economic news. Everybody's very hopeful. All the financial gurus out there are looking forward to a September rate cut by the Fed and today's latest CPI numbers indicating that. So we have that going on. I know that Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth in the headlines addressing all the different criticism of President Trump's, quote, Liberation Day actions to fight crime. And as well, we have Ben Manis back. Hey, Ben.
All right.
Ben, you're back. Were you good?
Okay.
Right. Sorry about that. You were saying.
All right. So look. He has 30 days to act because it is like going to war. He has to get Congress to amend the Home Rule Act. That's the only way for this to work. And the reason why simply assuming the duties of the police department and flooding the streets with National Guard, which, by the way, they did back in the 90s, in the early 2000s when I was policing there, is the prosecutors. It's the same problem we in Philly have with Krasner. The adult prosecutions are done by U.S. attorneys, the same people who do the federal crime, and they're overworked and underpaid, and they don't work nights and weekends. And then as this grand experiment, they gave the juvenile prosecutions over to the district attorney general, who's elected, who's a progressive. And, you know, we see that the juvenile crime has simply skyrocketed. There's just no consequences for kids in D.C. And I mean, kids, they do 18, not 16, like some places. So, you know, yes, Trump needs to, you know, seriously organize Congress to do something about D.C. Because if you, travel like I do, London, Paris, you know, Rome, hey, Mexico City, all have extremely lower crime rates than Washington. It's embarrassing as a country to see this. But yeah, he has to get Congress to act, and they have to do something about the home rule, because they just simply can't manage anything legitimately in D.C. And I actually have a great footnote about this. Are you still with me?
Yep, we're with you.
Okay. I was one of my readers this morning, a friend of mine who's a serious crimes detective with the Met, the London Metropolitan Police. And he's of Indo English descent. And he looked at this and he said, you know what this looks like? Any place that emerges from a protest, that gets its independence from some kind of civil protest, as D.C. did with Home Rule in the 70s during the Civil Rights Act, mm-hmm. Is doomed to fail if it doesn't govern effectively. And you look at that from an Englishman's perspective, and you're like, oh, yeah, look at, Jamaica. Look at some of the African and Middle Eastern places that are now flooding the zone with their immigration issue. Mm-hmm. Because they, they simply broke off saying it's civil rights, but they never really looked at governance and what needs to be done. And that's the problem with D.C. D.C. is just simply run poorly and corruptly. So they have to do something. Now, how does this apply to Philly, you might be asking? Well, Philly is a microcosm of what's happening in D.C. because Philadelphia is the only city in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania with, wait for it, a Home Rule Act. And that Home Rule Act marginalized the office of the sheriff, eliminated the office of the constable, and created basically no checks and balances. The inspector generals can't investigate elected officials. They have zero oversight the way they would if they had a county. If you compare us to Pittsburgh, Allegheny County runs the sheriff and the corrections and various court systems. So, you don't just have one type of voter looking at Pittsburgh. You have the suburban too. So, this is a problem. You can't have someone running completely outside oversight and expect that to result in a good thing.
So you have, I'm looking through, and so that you address this, broadandliberty.com, Washington, Philadelphia, and the problems of home rule. And that leads us into the other story that you have on municipal government, talking about the sheriff's office. And you believe the sheriff's office needs a state takeover. So we,
yes, that was a while back, but yes, yeah. 100%.
So that was another, story that I forgot that you had talked about with Rochelle Bilal, where there was all that alleged corruption. That slipped my mind. So I just saw that pop up, and I just wanted to weave that into the conversation.
Yeah, I think Philly's home rule charter should be repealed as well, or at least amended. I think Harrisburg has something to do, and even when you talk about things like SEPTA, and the various budget crisis, Philly, the silent killer that nobody talks about in Philadelphia, other than things like crime and corruption, is the fact that the pension system here is amazingly underfunded. There's just no plan to fix it, because look at who we have in council. Mm-hmm. So it's very important for Harrisburg to kind of, regain some control, because if you look at other states, look at New York, right? New York's a problem. But New York State, or, Illinois, for that matter, rely on New York City and Chicago to feed them taxes. Philly, being the biggest city in Pennsylvania, is actually a drain on state resources. So, and it's because no one has ever got their hands around the problems here before they metastasize like a cancer. Mm-hmm. The sheriff is a great example of it, because if they use what they did with the parking authority, when the parking authority was awash with corruption, the state house took it over. So even though it says Philadelphia Parking Authority on their patch, they're a state-run agency. So it's important for, someone to bring some sanity into this, because if you look at it's not just the corruption in the sheriff's office, it's the fact that while they're not doing their job, look at the blight in our communities. Look at the houses that aren't being seized and they're boarded up and they're turning into, you know, heroin dens. That's 100% on the sheriff, who's just not doing that job effectively.
Yeah, and yet, though, if you think about Philadelphians and voting people in and people who get to keep their jobs, and you mentioned D.A. Krasner, who, I mean, talk about...
next piece.
Right? The bipolar nature of this, that you have, somebody like D.A. Larry Krasner, who's an incumbent, and we've talked a lot about Pat Dugan, now longtime Democrat, who's going up against him as a Republican. It's a long shot, but he's going for it. But if you think about it, people are reelecting Larry Krasner over and over. And the same with Bilal. And that really brings up, to my point, with keeping these people in power, it's, in truth, isn't then you say, well, you get what you deserve.
Yes and no. It's what people are electing. You got to understand something. When you have a 17% overall voter turnout for a municipal election in a city of 1.6 million people, that isn't everyone. And the problem, yes, there is a problem. The problem is, and I'll say it even for our little safe audience, the Philly Republican City Committee has been corrupt and completely aligned with this. They've been getting handouts and patronage jobs for so long, they have completely forgot how to get out the vote. Now, let's look at Dugan versus Krasner. I'm covering this very in-depth in my next piece. It'll be out later this week. But, Dugan, we have 20% Republicans in the city of Philadelphia. Now, that's not a majority by any means. But when you could only get a 17% overall turnout, and the big McGilla is the primary election for Democrat, so we're really looking at 11 to 12% come November for the actual general election. Why haven't the local Republicans, the ward leaders, embraced mail-in balloting and gone out there and started getting their people to vote? Mm-hmm. 20% could win this thing. Just like New York, by the way, everyone's throwing their hands up about Mondami. But that's so far that left-wing vote is split three ways. You got Cuomo, Adams, and Mondami chasing the same votes. If Sliwa, if the New York Republican Party actually had a ground game still, which they don't because they just let it die, they could win this thing. They could sneak in. This is how people like Marty O'Malley win in Baltimore. This is even how Jim Kenney won in Philadelphia the first time, because Hardy Williams and them, they split the vote and he was able to sneak in. So this is one of those things. There is a mechanics to this, and the city committee has been so absolutely inept on purpose. Mm-hmm. I've met these people. I've worked with these. I've tried to get people like Beth Grossman elected, Sam Oropeza, people like that. They've just let kind of die on the vine because they're not doing their job. Mm-hmm. They sit, they talk, they complain, they have drinks at the, URC, and then they just seem happy. They don't even have their council seats anymore. So it is a matter of work. And who is doing the work? If it needs to be from outside, great. But, we really need our own Scott Pressler here in the city, because it's achievable. It's 100% achievable.
You mentioned, a couple of things. You mentioned Mamdani. So in New York, I will say with Mamdani, the difference is that his use of social media and getting a certain block of voters, and especially those on social media, and he is very good with social media. So I don't know that that's Pat Dugan's wheelhouse, but there has to be some kind of a conduit that, by the way, doesn't cost anything. It's free. And so
the same thing that Krasner does, by the way.
Yeah.
Krasner, so these are all millennial or Gen Z voters that vote because they have these ridiculous kind of aspirational goals that aren't kid tested, mother approved, this, whether it's socialism, whether it's criminal justice reform, bail reform, all these just insipid plans that have absolutely hit the rocks. But you don't know because you don't actually live in a society where you have to pay your own bills yet. You're out there in your 20s. So, this is the problem. People are giving a shot because they heard about it online. They're not actually living with other people in a society. So the only way to counter that is to get your door knocking the way Scott did with the state. Get you out there, knock on your doors, and hand out those mail-in ballots and get people who have been sitting on their couch too long to get those votes in. Mm-hmm. That's the only way to counter it.
Yeah, and I think you and I can agree on this. We can all agree on this one, Ben Manis, that when you think about recently, and State Senator Ward just brought this up last segment, that you had a governor ripping on somebody like Joe Picozzi in Philadelphia. What does that tell you, though? If I'm like Joe Picozzi, should be compliment. That's a compliment. That means that they're worried about this young.
That's what I was going to say.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, no, he's Shapiro's worried because so think about this. You had a kind of an unholy pact between guys like Driscoll and the Boyle brothers, Nielsen in Northeast Philly, where Picozzi's now a senator. And because, they have one councilman up there, O'Neill, who's been around since the 70s and really doesn't do anything but zoning arguments, they're in a situation where what happens if there's some Republican momentum in three or four districts surrounding Martina White's House district that will actually flip red in a minute? Because if you look at the electoral maps, every municipal and federal election, that whole chunk of Northeast Philly is red. So why do we have a bunch of state reps in a House district that are blue?
Ben Manis, sorry for the technical problems. Really appreciate you. Look forward to the next piece dropping, broadandliberty.com. Ben Manis, thank you so much. I'm Dawn Stensland. That's it for me. We're making way for the Dom Giordano Show coming up next.
Dawn Stensland from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.